welcome the Minister of Public Enterprises, Minister Brown, and Deputy Minister of Energy, Ambassador Majola, the acting DG of the Department of Energy and your team, DDG, your team and representatives from ESCOM. Honourable members, don't allow yourself to be disturbed there. Members of the public and the members of the media, you all welcome. I'm not going to make any long introductory remarks. I hope we'll make some progress today. I've been waiting in anticipation as much as you have been waiting. So we will soon go straight to get an update. On progress with regard to the signing of the power purchase agreement with the independent power producers. I'm told that there will be one presentation made. I'm sure that will be clarified before the presentation itself is made. So I'm going to give over to the Deputy Minister of Energy, Ambassador Majola, to make the opening remarks. The Minister of Public Enterprises is here, so I'm I can only do that if you choose to bow. So, Ambassador Major, please can you make your opening remarks before we get the presentation, and we do just clarify the approach to the presentation itself. We had earlier said that item with both ESCOM and DOE, just explain how that is going to be approached. So it's over to you. We have until 1 o'clock.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Good morning, Honourable Minister and your team.
No, he says that I'm too much in a hurry.
They haven't done the apologies.
Yes. He says I'm too much in a hurry. I won't say what the actual word he used. It was used by one Honourable Member in the past, so I don't want to use it. You do have apologies. Okay, let me slow down. Can we have apologies?
Thank you, Chair. Just the following apologies. Mr. Mbuyani, who's on leave. Mr. Tlada and Mrs. Faku, who's both on sick leave. And then Mr. Kluama, who has other commitments, so he's unable to attend the meeting. Those are the four apologies, Chair.
So those are the apologies. Those are the apologies from the honourable members. So I hope they are in order. Thank you. I don't know if you have apologies from your side. You can proceed, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think all the apologies, including the Minister's, I assume, have been recorded. Morning, Honourable Members, members of the public and the media. Chairperson, as you have said, we have a single presentation, which is the outcome of meetings that the team from DOE, from ESCOM, I think there was input as well from National Treasury and the DPE have put together. So we agreed then we'll just have this single presentation. But maybe before we begin, I just want to speak to issues around process, Chairperson, to say that what the colleagues will be presenting today is what they have up to date. There is still further work that needs to be done because there are still engagements that need to happen with NERSA, for instance, in terms of some of the issues that have been raised around the tariff and other matters in the discussion, the RCA and so on and so forth. But more than that as well, from a Department of Energy as well perspective, we are also seeking real further engagements with NERSA so that we can seek some clarity with their assistance around some of the court judgment in relation to determinations by the minister, because that does have an impact on a number of issues as we go forward. So today's meeting is really almost just an update. It is not a final process because we still have to clarify all these issues before we come to a final determination. So the colleagues will actually be outlining what has been discussed, where are the issues, and I think the need, as I said, to expand the team to include NERSA. I think colleagues are also aware that there have been some changes within ESCOM itself, so those discussions are happening, even though there isn't even an acting CEO as we speak, but we have the minister here of DPE, which I want to take as a sign of the seriousness of the matter and how we are all trying to find a way that is going to be sustainable, which is not going to choke the economy, and which will take into account the current conditions in the country, which are conditions which the NDP had not, the NDP had envisaged at least a 5% growth and increased demand and so on and so forth, and we are not in that situation, which has an impact in terms of, as well, demand on electricity and some of the issues around the tariff. So we have the challenge of trying to grow the economy. At the same time, we want to make sure that we can keep energy, access, sustainability, affordability. So those are all the things that we're trying to juggle with. But I will now, Chairperson, with your permission, just ask the DG to introduce the team that will then make this presentation. I believe in the room, apart from the Minister of DPE and the officials, we also have people from ESCOM. We have a team from ESCOM, and of course we've got the team from DOE. But we do not have anybody from National Treasury, and we believe that there's quite a few inputs that would still require from National Treasury itself. And the new DG, I think, is very keen to also find an opportunity to engage on these matters. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks very much. So let me not interfere with the presentation. So continue. I see Minister Brown nodding when you say that we need contribution in the process from National Treasury. So go ahead with the presentation, because at the end of the day, at least from where I sit, from the time we scheduled this meeting, we want some definite clarity about where are we at this point in time. And if we can't have clarity, 100% clarity today, we need some certainty in the foreseeable future about exactly how this process is going to be concluded. So go ahead. You know where I come from on this matter. So let me not disturb your presentation. So in February, the President said to the nation, this is what we're going to do with regard to these matters. So since then, so that has been my overall approach. So where are we with regard to the directive given in February? So go ahead with the presentation, and I think I've heard you, Deputy Minister, with regard to the involvement of NERSA and National Treasury. So let's return to that at the end of the presentation. But we need some definite clarity so that there's no confusion in public about where the process is going. Acting DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning to you, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members. Members of the public here present. Chair, I speak here on behalf of the other Directors General who are part of this team. We are here to present the progress that the team has made to date. And I must indicate, Chair, that from where we started, we have gone a long way. The differences that we had at the beginning have narrowed. One of the things that I would like to just stress from the beginning is that we are committed to finding a solution. We believe that there are obligations, contractual obligations, that the state must fulfill. But at the same time, we are mindful that there is a national asset, being ESCOM, that also needs to be, to ensure that it is sustainable and it needs to be protected. So we proceed, Chair, from that point. So last week when we met, in a meeting chaired, co-chaired by the DG DPE, we decided that we will present, we will make one presentation so that it is clear where we agree and where we need to do some more work. As recently as this morning, we've been in contact with the NERSA as well as National Treasury, and we have agreed to a further meeting later on this week. So, Chair, the one area that as we proceed, we have agreed on is the fact that the demand situation has changed, and there is no doubt that there is a surplus at the moment. So we can't proceed business as usual with that. So we will have to change course, perhaps not course, but pace going forward, so that we really respond to current realities. The other area is the cost of energy. I think we are agonizing as a team about the cost of energy and the fact that it has an impact on jobs in this country, and we have an obligation as the team that is charged with this task to achieve a balance. So what we will be making, the recommendations that we'll be making to our policymakers, the ministers, will take all of these into account, and we are confident that we should be in a position to conclude all this from a team perspective within this month of June. It is a tough ask, but that's the commitment that we've made. We will make our own proposals to the principals before the end of this month. Chair, as to the progress to date, Mr. Apane has been chosen by the team, the DDG for energy policy planning and clean energy from energy, to lead the presentation. And in terms of the questions, Chair, then the team will support in terms of their responses. But Mr. Apane will lead the presentation. With your permission, Chair, thank you.
Mr. Apane.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister. I will be taking you through the slide presentation. I need to indicate that this is a joint effort by the team comprising DOE, DPE, ESCOM, the IPP office, and as already indicated, we also need to broaden, and I will provide an update as to how far we have gone in the next steps, Chair, as you have alluded. The presentation is about an update in regard to the signing of power purchase agreements between independent power producers and ESCOM. So we will share in the presentation some context regarding where this comes from, just so that we can give some historical perspective. And then just so that we identify the problem that we're trying to solve, we will advance some of the reasons that stand in the way of signing. It will be a summary. And then we will reflect on progress to date and also propose what the next steps are. We've taken the liberty. There is an appendix as well. The idea there is not so much to go through it. In fact, it shouldn't. Chair, we apologize because it's one of those things where we thought that, it might not be responding to the question today. But be that as it may, if I can go straight into the presentation, it starts with the White Paper on Energy Policy of 1989, in terms of which it envisages the participation by and of the private sector in the energy space for reasons that relate to the fact that it also would create an environment in terms of which we have alternative options in the event that Eskom is not able to provide all the generation capacity in this instance. The White Paper also talks to an open and non-discriminatory access to the transmission line, particularly in the context that there might be players other than Eskom in the space. This was then followed by the Electricity Regulation Act of 2006, and we refer to two specific provisions, one being around the minister's ability, the minister's empowered mandate to determine that new generation capacity is required under Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act, and to determine whether this would be, amongst other things, an Eskom or a private sector build, and who the purchaser of that power would be. And then also there is a provision under Section 21(3) that relates to non-discriminatory access to the wires. Now, Deputy Minister has alluded to some of the experience that we've had, I think around 2007, leading into 2008, severe load shedding, and an intervention required in order to, as it were, to ameliorate some of the constraints that related to Eskom, particularly under the new build program for Medupi and Kusile projects. And in December 2009, an interministerial committee on energy was formed to address these supply constraints. And one of the outcomes of this was, and we refer to it as the medium-term strategic framework, a decision that was made that would identify and then unblock those constraints relating to private sector participation in the electricity generation sector. And then in order to address the perception, real or perceived, around the Eskom role as both an energy provider and a buyer of energy from others, that this would be done in a manner that the Department of Energy would act as the procurer and then Eskom would act as the buyer. And this is, as I indicated, underscored under the Section 34 provision. Back then in 2008-09, one of the biggest challenges we faced was that there was not a clear plan, we call it a resource plan, which would outline what needs to be done. And I think the context here also needs to be elaborated on, which is the fact that up to 2006, Eskom was the so-called supplier of last resort, which means that Eskom was responsible for balancing supply and demand and consequently for making decisions around which power stations to build, when, and so on. And from 2006, with adoption of the Electricity Regulation Act, it meant that government then assumed that role through the Minister of Energy. And the IRP was then promulgated, that's an error, it was in March 2011, the IRP was promulgated, and so-called determinations under Section 34 were then made pursuant to the IRP. In the IRP is an outline of the various technologies and the various megawatt allocations, including the timing of the introduction of those megawatts. And I think as Minister, as Deputy Minister has already indicated, we make certain assumptions around what the demand for electricity would look like, and what is certain is that you can never get that right. The whole idea is that what flexibility do you bring into the plan, in order into the integrated resource plan, in order to keep up with those variables. Perhaps a few last points in the policy space is that in 2011. And there was also a Green Energy Accord that was signed. And if you go back in December of that year, we also hosted COP17, Conference of the Parties under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in Durban. And the first determination had been made at that point, and the procurement process was initiated. A little bit of detail is that the determination that the Minister of Energy makes in relation to the IRP, a mechanism is put in place for the National Energy Regulator, the Energy Regulator, to concur. And what that then means is that the regulator agrees to A, license those projects that would have followed the procurement process, and then secondly is that the costs incurred in relation to those projects would be passed through to the electricity consumer. And the idea is that this would put Eskom in a net neutral position. That is the principle behind the issuing by the Minister of the determination, but also seeking concurrence by the regulator so that you create certainty that those projects would be licensed and that it would be cost. I'm not going to dwell too much on the slide, but basically what we then do is to give another context that relates to one of the elements in the 9-point plan adopted by government about resolving the energy challenge. And this goes back now to the time that we experienced, if you like, the second wave of load shedding, that a decision had then been made that independent power producers or this program would contribute in relation to some of the capacity that is required side by side with Eskom. Chair, we took the liberty, and as I indicated, this is just for, if you like, for completeness sake, but it does not add to today's. So I'm going to jump the slides that relate to what is an IPP and the role of IPPs and so on. I presume that there might be questions that arise, and we will take it from there. So we now fast-track to the point where we have a number of projects. We call them bid windows, number 4 and 4.5. That had been procured, and there are some questions, there are some problems in relation to concluding at those. And maybe before we go into the resolution of the problems or the impasse, we want to reflect on what is a summary, what is a characterization of this impasse. And in the main, it relates to the lack of common understanding of the problem. And Chair, as Deputy Minister has already indicated, it took a coming together between the various players, the counterparts as we call them, and a summary of what has now been identified as the problem statement, if you like, is reflected on the stage. So the parties agree that it might come across as being an impasse, but the real issues that stand in the way of signing relate to this. I'm going to summarize it very quickly. Firstly is that the program or the projects result in a higher cost to ESCOM than what it can recover through the tariffs, and therefore this adversely impact the balance sheet. Right, so the cost, notwithstanding that there is a cost recovery mechanism, the reality is that they impact ESCOM's balance sheet by imposing additional costs, and we will come to some discussion on this particular point. There is also an issue around the cost to the South African consumer that would have to then carry that cost. So in other words, even though this is the IPP side, there is also another side of the coin, so to speak, which is related to the fact that the consumer pays for all the costs, IPP costs and ESCOM costs. I think my DM has alluded to the current situation characterized by low GDP growth and an oversupply of electricity, and therefore this need to then revisit the what we refer to as pace and scale of the rollout of the power generation or new generation capacity program. The last bullet point there relates to, and this is just so that we close the loop, but there was a sense that, in fact, the program is also adversely impacting the coal-fired, the marginal coal-fired power stations, and five of them had been identified, and that, you know, they run the risk that they might be closed sooner due to the extent to which we're introducing, or the pace at which we're introducing the renewable energy IPP program. Then, ESCOM had indicated that there would be a willingness to sign, right, but within the context of these problems that had been identified, and I hope it becomes very evident that amongst these issues is the question around the affordability of the program 4 and 4.5. To the extent that ESCOM had then identified that a 77 cents per kilowatt hour cap would be an affordable level at which these prices, I mean these projects, would be acceptable from that perspective of signing. And therefore, in relation to this, ESCOM had taken the necessary steps, as it were, which would be to inform all the players involved in what we refer to as the government support framework agreement for direct support to ESCOM under the circumstances that ESCOM finds itself in. What the government support framework agreement, if I can maybe just very quickly indicate, is that the government support framework agreement is signed between the three government role players, National Treasury, Public Enterprises, and the Department of Energy, in order to, if you recall, I had mentioned that this is intended to keep ESCOM in a net zero financial position in relation to these IPPs. And the idea is that if they cannot find a cost recovery as contemplated under the regulatory approval, that then there is another form of comfort that is provided by the government support framework agreement. So it's almost like it's a layered cover for ESCOM. It starts with a tariff, and then should there be some, if you like, failure, as we call it, failure in the cost recovery mechanism, that the government support framework agreement would then provide ESCOM with that cover. And in fact, the point about this is that ESCOM has notified the various players in regard to this. So, taking that into consideration, we arrive at a position where we digest all of this And in February of this year, the President had made it very clear that in the State of the Nation address that the IPP program proceeds and that some work has to be done in order to find common cause between the counterparts in order to resolve this. We summarize the discussions in relation to what we then take from the various counterparts into what we then, as I indicated, you know, try and solve. It has two parts. The first part relating to the concern around overcapacity. Right? So it is a fact that currently, particularly given the commissioning of the various units at Medupi, and also given the medium, we refer to it as the medium-term outlook. In other words, the flat, if not declining, electricity demand that poses a question around the pace and scale of the rollout of this program. In the medium term, we are referring to the period up to 2021. That we see a particular character of the demand which might be, relative to the supply situation, which is different to the period beyond 2022. And therefore, our problem statement tries to solve this relative to the medium term, but also relative to the period after the medium term. That's the first part of how we addressed or approached the resolution of this, to define this in the medium term and longer than the medium term. And then secondly is to reflect on the financial impact on ESCOM in order to provide some solution there too. We recognize that there are certain risks if we do not have resolution, and on the slide we look at the issue around the risk in relation to procurement. We look at the risks in relation to contingent liabilities being triggered if ESCOM and default. So it's both sides. We caught between, you know, a problem that, you know, if you continue and sign, there might well be certain sovereign balance sheet issues that we have to address, which, in fact, on the third bullet point, we say potential sovereign downgrade. I mean, you must understand the context within which we're preparing this, is that, yes, in fact, we sit now in a situation where some of the risks that have been identified have materialized. There is also a risk in relation to our commitment to the climate change agreements that we have entered into, but also government policy around climate change, but also regulatory certainty around what happens with this. And I think the message has been very clear and consistent, is that we need to find a solution as outlined in the State of the Nation address, that the program proceeds, and these issues are what we need to resolve, taking them into account. So, what are then the interventions that have been put in place in order to try and solve this? There are external factors that we have to take into account. There has been a successful challenge in the High Court that had stood in the way of the resolution of the RCA. I think we do have an acronym. RCA is an acronym for the Regulatory Clearing Account. And the Regulatory Clearing Account is what would have then given comfort about the cost recovery of costs that would have been incurred by ESCOM. We call it that the Bobet judgment. That Bobet judgment had then set aside the tariff adjustment going into 2017, this year, on the 1st of April. And therefore, ESCOM had been allowed a 2.2% tariff increase. Now, as you might well be aware, this was successfully challenged by both ESCOM and the regulator, and that then sets the process forward for ESCOM being able to then approach the regulator in order to resolve the regulatory clearing account. So I apologize, some of these things tend to be, and I hope I'm still, you know, on track, but it, some of them tend to be technical, but effectively what it means is that we're saying, had the Bobet process been implemented, if I can put it that, if the Bobet judgment had not created a situation where the resolution of the RCA had been delayed, then we might be sitting in a completely different situation in relation to ESCOM's ability to proceed with the signing of these contracts. And as I indicated, we're now at a point where there is now a successful challenge, and therefore ESCOM would be able to approach the regulator as originally contemplated. It delayed this whole process by a number of months, and therefore it is only next year that you can have a tariff adjustment in relation to the regulatory clearing account. So that's the first part that relates to that, the delay, and but also how this could be resolved. So ESCOM is now in a position to proceed with the application to NERSA of the regulatory clearing account. The second point relates to, or in relation to the intervention, is that it is also out there that ESCOM has approached NERSA in regard to a tariff adjustment for this coming cycle. And when that happens, it would also then create space for ESCOM to be able to conclude these contracts. There is a question around what happens in the interim. And in the interim, one of the issues that had been discussed by the team, and we also need to point out that this is a work in progress, relates to approaching the regulator on the basis of an approach that ESCOM has already made. And when I say we approach the regulator, this is a regulatory matter that ESCOM has to drive, ESCOM has to lead, around and conclude on this process around ESCOM a hardship under the circumstances. And that parallel to this process with NERSA, that some soft support is being solicited from the National Treasury in the period until there is a tariff adjustment in 2018. Now, these two points, we believe that their conclusion would then give space or provide space, without repeating this, provide space, because it had been raised as being, or they had been raised as being the biggest obstacle to ESCOM being able to enter into those contracts. I indicated that we have divided the time frame for resolution, if you like, the periods, into two insofar as excess capacity is concerned. In the medium term, we're saying that pace and scale still has to be revisited, but at least give ESCOM the necessary ability to be able to enter it. In the period beyond the medium-term outlook, we also agreed that the resolution of the integrated resource plan would indicate what the generation capacity requirements for the country would be under the circumstances of the supply and demand situation that has since changed. There is also an element that we need to bring in which is related to one of government's policy objectives of increasing the level of participation by black industrialists in the program itself, in the IPP program. Now, over and above the short and the medium-term elements, there are also broader policy issues that confront us that we want to flag. And I think my DG has alluded to it. When all is said and done, one of government's objectives in the energy space relates to reducing the cost of electricity, and all that we do, or everything that we do, must be aimed at lowering the cost of electricity. But at the same time, there are fundamental questions being asked around the impact of the various programs on Eskom's balance sheet, and we need to find a solution to that. That might also have a particular impact on the structure of the market, of the electricity market, going forward, and what the various contributions to the energy mix entail. Government has adopted an energy mix policy, and the debate is still out there as to what the contribution by the various technologies would be. And in fact, just to close that loop, is that that is being or will be resolved through the and the integrated resource plan. Chair, without belaboring the point, there are six steps then that have been put in place. In fact, there are seven. There's one that I will talk to that we believe would take us to a resolution. And if you look at the timelines, they range from when we started to around August. There is still some definition that has to be worked out, particularly with external role players. But we believe that the first step, which is the RCA, in the context of the successful Bobet judgment application, that first step would lead us into a situation where Eskom is able to approach NERSA. And the second one is, notwithstanding the RCA, that there's still an approach that relates to an adjustment of the tariff by Eskom. And we have indicated that there, in fact, around July 2017, but in fact, Eskom has already kick-started a process of approaching NERSA, and we just see that following through and being concluded. I also need to caution, Chair, that NERSA is an independent regulator, so we make assumptions, and I think the DG has already indicated that there is an approach, but NERSA makes its own independent decisions in relation to regulatory processes, and that's why we're saying that, and we have actually reflected on the wording that we use when we say it's supported by the DOE. It's not like the DOE bears down on NERSA. I think we need to be very clear about that. We're saying that there is an issue that NERSA needs to look at, and Eskom will make the case for that in relation to the first part. But over and above that, there is, as I indicated, Eskom has already approached National Treasury and the other players in the government support framework agreement, and there is a sense that even a soft support from National Treasury might be able to give Eskom the space to proceed faster than having to wait until 2018 when the tariff has to be adjusted. And then from a DOE point of view, just certainty around the conclusion of the IRP, and in the IRP, the pace and scale would be revisited in relation to generation capacity that would be introduced, and we have already indicated that the fourth quarter of this year is when we will conclude on the IRP process. In the short term, I think this is bullet number five, point number five, is that we're saying that under the circumstances of overcapacity under up to 2021 and thereabouts, that we will then review the pace and scale of the rollout program of the IPP program, and we believe that much as this is an IRP a matter that we would be able to, Chair, as you indicated, we want to be able to come to some sense by around August this year. And then maybe just the other point, which we have not reflected on here, but it has emerged, is that in the Cape High Court decision that was made a few months ago, one of the questions that arose was the matter of the determinations under Section 34 of the Electricity Regulation Act that have been made by the Minister. The context that we raise this issue is that we seek to have clarity around what this means vis-a-vis all the other determinations that have been made. And I think it's important that we also have, we see this as an external a matter, because it's dependent on the clarity that we will receive. But it is something that would create certainty as to the determinations that have been made by the Minister so far. And then I think the last point here relates to the point about alignment, or if you like, accelerated participation by black industrialists in the program as well. Thank you very much, Chair. I think that comes to the end of the thing. So what we have done also, if we've taken the liberty to include some the appendix. Thank you.
Interesting here. You see the agenda item says the update on the signing of power purchase agreement. And so your presentation says resolving the IPP procurement per se. And I suppose it is with regard to the signing of the power purchase agreements. And then in the body of this presentation, there's someone will talk about the interventions and we list them. And then later the steps. But nothing talks about the actual thing about the signing and the in the steps when that happens or message to happen, neither in the board of the presentation or in the steps. I don't see that. I can see the things you say about what you want to do to resolve, but does that lead to signing? And so in the steps, at what point? That's unclear to me. Because I thought really that was the issue that we required clarity around. So I'm just noting that. So that's why we phrased the item in the manner that we did. But the presentation doesn't give an indication. That's so what steps have been taken to resolve the general impasse. But doesn't say on the basis of that, the steps we're taking, at what point we're hoping to sign, or put it differently, or not to sign. So that is not unclear. I don't know if we still clarify that. So, Deputy Minister, I'm sure you want to comment before I give over to questions. Minister Brown, and then Deputy Minister. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think at the end of those steps, there'll be a signing. I just want to take one step back, and I'm really grateful for the fact that there's some agreement on how to take the process forward amongst the counterparts. But let's take one step back. South Africa is a fossil fuel heavy country. We are wanting to move to cleaner and greener and renewable energy. What has to happen is that we've got to find a more balanced way of doing so, and that's what they're trying to do here. So at the end of the seven steps will be the signing. We are committed to signing those. What is happening is that we have, in Eskom now, Eskom has to deal with the fact that it costs Eskom actually 32 cents per kilowatt to produce power. The actual cost of renewable energy is about 2 rand 14 cents per kilowatt, and we are able to sell it for about 84 cents per kilowatt. So it's about trying to bring about that balance. How do we, and I think all the steps that they've taken, they've actually put all of those issues into the pot. And at the end of it, I remember Eskom has signed bid window 1 to 3. They now have to sign 4 and 4.5. 4 is contracted already, 4.5 still needs to be contracted. And so it's about signing the last two in this cycle. The last two windows. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks very much. So, okay. I hope that can be articulated more clearly. Because you see, from where I sit, and I want to assume from the side of those who participate in the program and from the side of the public, so the overriding question is this happening, when is it happening, so that there's some sense. So you could have assumed, so the signing will happen in between the steps, or so there's got to be clarity. So is it, and Minister has now clarified that, we've got to go through all these steps, finalize them, and that will lead to signing. So that has got to be clear to us that, there were to be difficulties with regard to solving all of the above steps, so that will also lead to the delay of the actual signing. So that at least gives clarity about what time horizon we're looking at. All right, Deputy Minister, and thanks for that, Minister Brown. Deputy Minister, and then honourable members, it will be your time for questions.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the Minister as well for clarifying that issue. I think it's an important matter that you raised, Chairperson. I think the main issue really maybe was just that conclusion that we need to go through these steps so that in the end, as we sign, there's a clear way forward in terms of making sure that all these considerations that were spoken about would have been considered, the affordability, the sustainability, and of the price path, but also the issue of Eskom and its own the fact that we had wanted to ensure that this process is actually price neutral in terms of Eskom and how we look into those things. It's also an opportunity for us all chairperson to actually look and say, how do we make sure that we just don't gallop and then get to a point where we realize that maybe we should have done things differently. So this is putting us in a situation where we all have to sit around the table and look at those issues, because they have implications not only for this round but in terms of power generation for the next few years. Of course, among the 7 points that need to be looked at, the fourth point around the IRP is not necessarily a stumbling block in terms of this particular process. So I just thought it's also important to clarify that one point in terms of that. But other than that, Chairperson, I think we're ready to listen to the honorable members, and we can then try to respond to the issues raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, it is time for questions. Honourable Estes and Honourable Makai. Honourable Estes, Honourable Lamini, Honourable Estes first, followed by Honourable Makai, and then Honourable.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, Deputy Minister. Chair, unfortunately, I don't know, I can't agree with Mrs. Brown's statement about maybe during the first bidding period, renewable cost was very high, but renewables is undisputedly the cheapest form of generation available now. It's up to 40% cheaper than coal bids at this time. It is also the presenter, before that carried on about NERSA. NERSA has allowed Eskom price increases of 440% since 2008. 440% that the consumer must pay. And the bad news for the South African economy and the growth is there's largely hinge on spending of our consumers. And now everyone is, even government companies and citizens, everyone, all institutions are trying ways to use less power. It took 12 months and 12 months to sign the first agreements, the first three rounds of renewable producers. This fourth round bidders has now been waiting for about 23 months, and Mr. Brown has been noticeably absent from public debates between in this time when the new energy was discussed. And she could have just instructed Eskom to comply with the law and sign the agreement. The 2010 IRP also overestimates future electricity city demand as much as 50%. It is a lot. And one of the main reasons was the lack of the economic growth caused in part by Eskom's high tariff. It's estimated, I'm trying to read my handwriting, the estimate of renewable energy cost in the 2006 IRP was outdated and completely wrong. It's much higher than the prices of wind and power submitted to the Department of Energy. Nuclear, for one, was underestimated. And the long wait and signing of the of this agreement has cost the country about 60 billion rand again and further investment. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I must say I'm a bit surprised by the presentation we've received today. This has been a long-outstanding issue, and you yourself have been privy to phone calls from workers in the sector who, because of the uncertainty, have had to be benched. They're not earning an income. They're not earning money. There's uncertainty in the industry. People will potentially lose their jobs. The longevity of their jobs are now being questioned. And one of the key things we're not seeing here is the huge and significant impact that Eskom's perseveration on this matter will have on the actual lives of South Africans, specifically in the areas where these projects work, specifically in the Northern Cape, where, you know, quite a poor province. And the fact of the matter is, Chair, this presentation to me strikes as nothing but wholesale capitulation to Eskom. And here we are having to hear a sob story from Eskom, one of the worst managed SOEs in the history of the country. Huge corruption issues, huge stage capture issues. Now without an acting board, or, you know, every single day we hear new revelations about the problems at Eskom. And here we are now having to worry about Eskom's balance sheet, when Eskom's balance sheet is actually a result of years and years of mismanagement. It has nothing to do with the IPP program that has been in operation since 2001. So let's not kid ourselves that Eskom's dire situation is as a result of IPPs. They actually make the point in their presentation that it's the IPPs, it's the result of the IPPs that Eskom is in this dire state, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And, Chair, it's absolute nonsense. It's blatantly misleading the public, and it's absolute rubbish. It cannot be substantiated by any of the facts. And the fact of the matter is, Chair, we have the DM here telling us, oh, you know, we might have to slow down, we might have to change gear. Chair, this policy development of the renewables program has been coming since 1998 in the white paper. It was updated in 2006 with regulations. It was updated again in 2009 with regulations. It was updated again in 2010 with the first promulgation of the IRP 2010. Where is Eskom now telling us they were not aware of these changes that were coming to the industry and the sector, and now we need to slow down because Eskom needs to catch up and needs time to adjust to the changes in the policy environment? The policy environment has been changing since 1998. Again, mismanagement at Eskom, failure of Eskom to adhere to changes in policy and regulation that we as a country now have to, what, be pitiful for because they haven't done their job, they haven't functioned as a state-owned entity. The policy excuse is not an excuse. They know the policy. It's been around. It's been verified. They've even signed off. They contributed to the IRP. They've made submissions to the updated IRPs. This is not new policy planning. This environment has been established and has been operating for more than 7 years, Chair. So the fact of the matter is, if we're going to look at why Eskom is in the state that it is, we actually need a proper report about Eskom, Chair. You will recall, Chair, that NERSA has turned down multiple price increases from Eskom on the basis that Eskom is grossly inefficient, that Eskom needs to manage its cost basis downwards, and the fact is that's why on many occasions NERSA has not approved the tariff increases sought by Eskom, which is nothing even to say about the applications, Chair, which the High Court judgment, the Borbet judgment, actually admitted was one of the most woeful applications it's ever seen. There's one large energy or electricity provider in this country, and they can't even put together a proper RCA application or an NYPD application, Chair. So the faults keep coming back to Eskom, but now we need to inflict Eskom's problems on a very functional, very profitable, very drive of foreign direct investment into our country, make it their problem, make it the problem of the renewables industry, because Eskom is badly managed, because Eskom as a state-owned entity can't get its act together. Chair, it's not fair. It's a blatant abuse of its monopoly position, and Chair, we actually need to say this is unacceptable. Chair, I'm also surprised how we are sitting with a company telling us how woeful its balance sheet is, but we know for a very fact that this is a company that wants to procure nuclear. Nuclear is one of the most expensive forms of energy. They are still, Chair, as we all know, they've applied to National Treasury for deviations from the procurement regulations. So wait, we can't afford renewables, but we can afford nuclear. When, Chair, if you look at the levelized cost of both of those, it is clear that renewables are far, 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 far cheaper than nuclear. Far cheaper. So how does Eskom come before us and say, we can't afford renewables, but we are still planning to go ahead with nuclear? Chair, it's just, it's inconsistent, it makes no sense, and to me it immediately reflects the propaganda campaign that was run last year by Eskom, by Mr. Kokko and the former CEO, where they tried to badmouth renewable industry in all of the major papers at the end of last year, where they kept going on about, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. All the research shows that it's more affordable than any other form of energy. Fact. If they discussed variability, there might be some argument there about when solar and renewable energies provide energy to Eskom, how that affects its ability to generate electricity at specific times. That's a conversation worth having, Chair. But the conversation presented today is so simplified, it's such an exaggeration, that frankly, Chair, it should be dismissed with the contempt that they bring it to us. Seriously, Chair, it is just a nonsense presentation, as always, as we can expect from Eskom. Chair, I take issue with the Minister's discussion around the blended price of electricity. I don't think her figure of 32 cents is correct. I speak under correction. But, Chair, that's also a fake or an oversimplified assessment of the blended cost. Eskom, many of Eskom's power stations will be coming to the end of their lives, which means that Eskom is going to have to procure new capacity, which means that they're going to have huge capital investments, which are going to push up the blended price. So telling us now a static blended price of 32 cents per kilowatt hour versus renewable static price of 2 rand 40, whatever the figure was, Chair, again, is a fake comparison. We know that the price of renewables have come down dramatically in bid windows 4 and 5 and continue to decline over time. So you can't provide us with a static figure of the blended price and say, this is the reason why Eskom cannot continue with renewables. Chair, it's misleading. It's not a true fact of the reality that we're facing, that renewable costs have come down. The average cost over the full period of all the bid windows will be hugely competitive to the other forms of production that Eskom is facing or is utilizing. What about how the blended price will be impacted when we bring on those first two additional nuclear reactors, Chair? The very high capital costs associated with nuclear. That will drive the blended cost through the roof, which will make renewables even more competitive in comparison to the overall blended price that Eskom will produce electricity at. So, Chair, please, the Minister must not mislead the public and must not give us a static figure which really only makes us look like idiots, like we don't understand what the Minister is talking about. It's wholly disingenuous, and we expect better from the Minister, frankly. Chair, I think we also just have a few questions about, there is a legal opinion that Eskom does not get to determine energy policy. That is clear. It's a fact in law. The fact that Eskom has now cherry-picked an amount of 70 cents per kilowatt hour from somewhere, Chair, runs counter to the program which we have run highly successfully in this country to have a competitive bid process. Eskom can't now go, screw that whole process, we're only going to sign projects for 77 cents. They don't have the legal authority to do so. Energy planning is determined by the department, and I emphasize, Chair, that if this is not resolved soon, I would encourage the renewables industry to take this matter to court. The government will lose, and Eskom will be forced to sign. Because frankly, Chair, they have been perseverating for way too long. People's jobs are on the line. Investment certainty is on the line. This very nascent industry, which has been hailed globally as one of the major successes in the renewable sector, is facing huge catastrophe in our country because we're having to placate Eskom. And frankly, Chair, I find that deeply unacceptable. And the fact of the matter is I would encourage renewables to take Eskom to court and force them to sign as they have been required to by the law. On that matter, Chair, I would very much like to get a straight answer from the Department of Energy if they are going to seek legal clarity or look for a judgment on the Section 34 determinations which have been issued by the Minister in terms of renewables. We know that the previous Minister issued 14,000 megawatts in terms of renewable capacity, of which about, and I speak under correction, but Chair, about 4,000 is on the grid, but 14,000 is what she's committed Eskom to broadly in terms of the bid window that have to occur in terms of her determination. Is the Department of Energy going to tell us today quite clearly that it is going to challenge that determination to have it reduced so we can have some certainty in the industry so that all these people sitting in this room can know whether to put their money here or elsewhere? Is the department going to challenge that determination? Those determinations, if they stand, mean that Eskom in the future will have to procure 14,000 megawatts from renewables by 2021, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of the determination. Chair, can we also have some idea? Mr. Pani has made reference to changes of the ownership structure for IPP, specifically looking at expanding the participation of black industrialists. As we know, Chair, that currently sits at 40%. It's one of the best programs in the country for black ownership. Mr. Rapani, could please provide us with some indication of where he expects that figure to go to? Does he expect it to go to 51%, 55%? Where's the upward level of that figure? A lot of the participation in this program comes from foreign direct investors, and foreign direct investors need specific clarity on what type of ownership structures will be in place going forward for IPP shares. It's a very important question that we need to have some clarity on. Chair, I'm also a bit concerned about any potential delays in the IRP update. It was supposed to be delivered to us in August. We know that that was highly critical of nuclear and somewhat supportive of renewables, although the renewable sector have had their criticisms of it. Chair, can we just get some clarity, please, on when we expect the IRP to be delivered? Because I do not want the department to use this whole imbroglio with Eskom to now try and delay the IRP, to fundamentally shift the IRP to say something completely different to what the IRP draft document actually said, which said that we do not need nuclear until 2035 and we need to promote a more vigorous renewable sector in South Africa. Is the department now trying to change that through delaying it to February or March next year, Chair? And Chair, finally, I agree with you. Can we just get a simple answer out of Eskom and everyone here today? When will you sign? It's a simple question. You're committed to do so by law. We are tired of the perseverating. Can you just give us a straight answer? Now is the time. I think everyone has been rather patient enough to let you all go off and do whatever you've needed to do. Chair, but can we get some straight answer? And Chair, can Eskom also be clear on whether it plans to use the Intergovernmental Framework Agreement to force Treasury to carry the full liabilities of the IPPs, which I don't think is necessary considering the success in the RCA judgment. All of those costs can be passed through the consumer. Eskom has never showed a particular interest in protecting consumers from high electricity increases before, so this whole argument that, oh, you know, passing on the cost of renewables seems so unfair to the consumer, Chair, it doesn't wash. This is a company that has asked for 27% tariff increase in the next financial year, an additional 4% for renewables and helping decarbonize the economy. You know, it's not their place to worry about that cost. It's the role of government, it's the role of the Department of Energy. So please, can they save their concerns and actually let the Department of Energy do their work, let them do their work, and let them do what is required in terms of the letter of the law. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Samir.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I think let's first get some of the things out of the way. The presenter, they tell us about what Mr. Jacob Zuma said in the State of Nation, that the IPPs will go ahead. That one must not take it serious. Let's not even bother about it because it's coming from someone who's got no integrity. So we must not take that one serious. But one of the issues that we said on this issue is that both departments, they must sit together so that we can be able to get clarity on these issues. Now they come here and there's confusion. As long as we are told that these IPPs are expensive, we'll never agree to them. And that should have been the clarity between the Department of Energy to make sure that we get proper answers on this issue. Because all these figures that are kept thrown everywhere, all we're interested on is that this thing must be affordable. As long as the Eskom, because at the end of the day, Eskom are the ones that charge consumers. The department, they sit there and they mess up everything that they want to do. Eventually, the people that need to pay in this country that we care about is the citizens. And they are the ones that are paying on a daily basis. They are the ones that, if they can't afford electricity, Eskom, they just switch off, more than ourselves sitting in these boardrooms. But the people there on the ground, when they can't afford to pay Eskom, they just switch off electricity, and then it disrupts their lives. So as long as we are still being told by Eskom and by the minister that these IPPs are going to cost 2 rand 4 cents, whatever the price, and Eskom is charging 77 cents. We are not interested to listen to anything that eventually is going to affect our citizens. That is our first standpoint. So that, between the departments, they must go and clarify that issue. Otherwise, we are not interested, even on signing. There must be no signing on any issue, because even if you look at the risks that have been tabled here, these risks, they're just talking to the government, and we know that the government is mismanaged, so we are not interested on that. What we are interested on is that eventually the person who must pay for this electricity is just ordinary citizens there on the ground. As long as these IPPs are deemed to be expensive, then they're not for us. We are not here to sit and be listening to issues of FDIs and all those things. They can go wherever they come from, because as long as our citizens, they cannot afford electricity, because we can't always be subjected to some foreign direct investment when our people, they can't afford electricity. We are sitting with people every day where their houses, they don't have electricity as we speak, because they can't afford electricity as it is now. And also one of the issues to try to deal with mitigating of the challenges on this issue. It talks of Eskom speaking to NERSA about tariff increase, but who must pay for those things? It's not the executives, it's not us, it's the people there on the ground. So we are not interested on those issues. So all we're saying is that the department, both the public enterprises as well as Department of Energy, go and get clear answers before we can even be obsessed about signing. That's why I'm saying don't take Mr. Jacob Zuma serious about this thing of signing. It's not necessary. Let's go and make sure that this thing is affordable and it's within, especially because now the only thing that we can use is currently Eskom. That is the one that is a major supplier of electricity. So as long as Eskom is telling us it's expensive, that is one of the issues that we need to be able to deal with. But also, Minister, we want to check in terms of these IPPs. The country has just spent over 300 billion investment in terms of these power stations. What is the balance here in terms of how much these IPPs can produce as compared to what is the current system of Eskom? Because if we're going to spend so much money, and tomorrow then the Eskom must cease to exist in terms of the current investment. So what is the bigger plan in terms of what we are dealing with? Because we've just spent a lot of money, and then as well as the issue of nuclear is going to be subjected to the same issues. As long as that nuclear cannot prove to anything that is expensive, that the ordinary citizens will have to pay for the price of that nuclear. That's why we oppose it. We're not even interested in getting to the semantics. We're just opposing anything that it means our ordinary people, they must go and pay more, as opposed to what they're paying now. Our people are unemployed as things stand. Municipalities, they are shutting down, they're closing the electricity in their houses because there's a bill of about 10 billion where municipalities, they are saying we are cutting off electricity. So ordinary people are suffering here. So we will not accept all those issues. So the risk that you put here, these risks are for the government. We're not interested. We're not government. It's being mismanaged. So all we're saying is that this thing look like there's no direction on it. So just park it there. Let's focus on other issues until you can come back to us, the department, to say, now these IPPs are affordable. Other than that, we must not be threatened about the FDIs and all those other issues. We care about our people that eventually, because even those FDIs that are coming here, they still want their money back, and who must pay? It's not government. And we've seen it in various issues that at the end of the day, everything is going to be passed down to ordinary citizens. So until that has been clarified, this IPP issue, we can put it at the, we can send it back to them, Chairperson, they'll come back to us when they are clear. There's no signing of anything until we deal with the issue of cost. The issue of cost is more critical than any other issue. We've got, there's no crisis, we've got oversupply of electricity, as Coleman said it. So we can just plan nicely without rushing to make sure that our people, they pay more on the issues of electricity. Thank you, Chairperson.
Is that all? Okay, that's an interesting angle. Okay, there are other things that you're saying. Okay, lots of things you're saying on our own. But there's only one that I'm interested in. So the main issue is, would the signing of these IPPs lead to the increase in the price of electricity. So I suppose that's the, what you say, what's the overriding thing for you. That will have, that issue will have to be engaged with. Can we are there further questions? If not, we can have responses. So when we respond, can we respond to the rest of the questions? But I'm interested in that question that, the one, just the one part of what the Honourable Lamin said about the IPPs and the price of electricity. Of course, I'm sure there's been a lot of debate with regard to that in public as well. So if there can be some response to that as part of the responses that you give in. So I assume that's all. So Deputy Minister, who's going to start?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will ask the team to respond, and then we maybe then at the end we'll sum up. If I may ask that Ompi respond to the three honourable members. I think they are number of questions that are really directly to the team.
Mr. Pan?
Thanks, Chair. That's why I have my colleague, Mr. Mbele, next to me here, because he will feel the more difficult question. But, Chair, if I can perhaps start with the big question around costs. I think we have to be very careful about electricity costs, because you want to compare apples with apples. And I think generally what we find being active in the space is that people compare different things, and therefore they come to the wrong conclusion. Let me give an example. Right there. Mr. Mackay reckons that the levelized cost of renewable energy is lower than nuclear. Now, at face value, you might think that is actually the case, but one of the things that we want to come back with is to explain how the system works, right? So if one were to take a very isolated kilowatt hour and compare it to another kilowatt hour, then you might come to a particular conclusion. But the system has to be balanced all the time. So the so-called, let's call it external costs, have to be taken into account as well. So you might find that in the narrow sense, this kilowatt hour is cheaper, but for you to bring it into the mix and keep the integrity of the system, you have to do other things that cost money. Right, so it's got to do with the structure of that market. So there will be, you know, actual direct costs, there will be ancillary costs, and so on. So we really have to take the time, I believe, at some point, just to have a common understanding of what it actually takes to balance the system. It is not as simple as this kilowatt hour is, you know, is cheaper than the other one, and then that's all that you buy. Various factors come into it. At what point? What does it mean from a wires perspective? You know, what does it mean? And so I'm not saying that, you know, one is not able to compare it, but one has to be alive to all of these other things that come into play, and therefore that particular common understanding would also help us to answer the question that I think Honourable Jared Lamini has raised about the relative cost. What you compare it with becomes very critical. The introduction of new capacity will always increase the cost. That's a fact. The issue is, in relative terms, which have a lower aggregate cost impact, and who bears the rest of the other costs. In the IPP space, what we normally do is we say the IPP is responsible, irrespective whether it's a renewable or a coal IPP, the IPP is responsible for connecting up to a particular point in the grid. The so-called deep connection implications are borne elsewhere. We pass those costs to the utility. So you don't see those costs as being what the IPP is responsible for bearing. We see those costs as being somebody else's responsibility. So, Chair, one of the improvements that we're introducing in relation to the next iteration of the IRP is the fact that we also reflect, we want to reflect on the transmission implications, because then it creates a much more complete picture around what it takes to bring a particular, you know, a generator into the grid beyond that grid connection point. And I then also want to clarify in relation to the IRP, Chair, that we indicated that the IRP, and I know this is not a discussion around it, and forgive me, DM, but I think the point is, the question has been raised by Honorable Mackay about, you know, the fact that the IRP says certain things. It says that we don't require nuclear until 2037, and so on. I say that is actually incorrect, because what we're saying is that the IRP entails four milestones. What we have shared is in relation to the second milestone, which is what the base case entails. Right? So it is incorrect to assume that that being the base case, that eventually, you know, that's what the IRP will be. Going back in 2008, when the first IRP was first presented, is that a conscious government policy decision was taken to introduce renewable energies, notwithstanding that the capital cost of solar PV at that time was $6 million per megawatt. If that had not been taken into account, we would never have had the renewable energy program as we speak, because in simple least cost perspective, it was deemed to be too expensive to even bring in. So the policy adjustment process, which is now milestone four, which is the last milestone process, becomes very critical to take into consideration as well. So where we start is more, we say we want to do this because it is least cost, but then you migrate from that in the various milestones, your position where you say, but government's policy objectives, and there are eight of them, how best do we achieve them, and therefore we arrive at the permit. I thought this was an issue that we need to, you know, to just raise, so that for the record becomes clear that we're not, it is not as simple as saying that nuclear is the lowest cost relative to, you know, other, sorry, renewables is not the lowest cost relative to other things. Like within the system, how do we achieve the lowest cost? Chair, and then if I can follow with the rest of the other questions as they arose. There was a question around whether we're saying the changes to the IP structure above 40%. The facts are we're not sitting at 40%. I think Mr. Mackay did indicate that he's speaking under correction, but that's incorrect. At the moment, we're seeing an average of about 29% of BEE participation in the program, and even that, as one of my colleagues likes to point out, it's in the context not necessarily of the just the ownership element. It's because BEE is defined in a particular way, if you recall, that there's, you know, the various layers, level 1, 2, 3, and so on. And the point we're making there is that you know, for it to be increased above the current levels would speak, you know, volumes for the program itself if that were to happen. Do we see clarity in relation to Section 35? I think the minister has gone on record, actually, about the Section 34, the judgment, the Cape Court High Judgment, the Cape High Court judgment that was made, and if you like, the questions that arise in relation to all the other determination, because the judgment seemed to create doubt as to the ability to, you know, to proceed with determinations or to bank on those determinations. I think the minister has indicated that she would like to get, a clarity, you know, through the court process in relation to those. So the answer to the question is that yes, the minister has indicated that she would like to get a clarity going forward in relation to the determinations. I have alluded to the question, Honourable Dlamini, around electricity costs. You know, it's a subject, and without repeating, it's a subject that gets abused. You know, electricity has costs in relation to a dimension of time. So at certain times, it costs different to at other times. So it's not like it has, it's not a static cost. It changes depending when you generate it and so on. But over and above that, there are, if you like, generation, there are fixed costs, there are also variable costs, and there are also, you know, issues. I think Mr. Mackay alluded to the so-called blended cost of electricity and so on. So all of those things are different, and you have to be careful not to compare, you know, apples with pears. So to the question that we need to clarify, that I think we would want to clarify the question in relation to the various costs of electricity, be it levelized costs, be it complete system costs, you know, be it capital costs, be it operational costs, and so on. But I think the point has been made in relation, I think that it was not a question, it was a comment, Chair, that the slide on the risk matrix that we have, well, not the risk matrix, but the reflection on the risk that we have indicated that it does not take into account the affordability by others, and therefore we might want to think about that. And I think that is the job of the Department of Energy and its policy objective to reduce costs, but also NERSA is charged with the responsibility of ensuring that we lower the cost of energy, and that's why I suppose we're sitting here, amongst other things. Then the last question that Mr. Dlamini raised was...
You went to his next question. Okay. The answer to the question he posed seems more complex than one would assume. But look, it's not helpful. Is there no simpler way of responding to that question? Because you see, if you don't, Mr. Dlamini is going to leave this meeting and continue sitting outside. We don't want these things. They lead more to price hikes. They are expensive. So is there no way of just responding to that? Is that a fact or not? So that's, I think that we must find a way of just responding to that, because, and he doesn't need all these complicated things. He just need to take the platform and say these things are going to be expensive, don't do them. Simple. So is that true or not? Can't you find a simpler way of responding to that? Okay. Continue your sequence. You can come back to this.
You know, let me give an example why this is difficult, right? So, when we have
a peak that we have to satisfy. In the South African system, we would use diesel, and it costs us 4 rand a kilowatt hour, say. Does that mean that diesel is expensive relative to coal, and therefore we should have used coal in order to make the demand? So the reality, Chair, is that you satisfy the demand using different technologies with different cost characteristics at different times of the day. What you are preoccupied with is to reduce the whole blended, the system cost must be lower. So you do your best to make sure that you do not deploy options which could have been substituted by cheaper ones. You know, so it's not at the point when you are short of marginal capacity, then the diesel that you use, right, is still cheaper than the blackout. And therefore, you would use, you'll be justified in using the diesel, provided that you did not have another cheaper option to do that. But it is not correct to then want to compare the diesel with coal or wind and so on. So this is what the difficulty is. But Chair, now having said all of that, is that we believe that in the energy mix, there is space for the various technologies, because from a strict financial cost point of view, right, that might be cheaper, but there's also the economic cost of some of these options. And then this is where you deliberately say, I would like to deploy this technology. For example, we have sun in this country, therefore we would like to take advantage of the sun resource, and we put solar water heaters on people's roofs, because that option displaces the amount of coal generation that we would have otherwise used to heat the water. You know, so Chair, it's why we have the debate sometimes about what the cost of the system entails.
Sorry, Chairperson, not the DG, or if it doesn't have an answer, it must just not answer. Simple as that. Because now, here on the presentation on slide 8, it talks about the program. That's why it talks of 2021, 2022. Now it comes and tries to justify it with peaks, that no, if on this peak you want to use this. Here we're talking of the electricity plan for the country. That's why you put time frames in terms of when would you look to implement this thing. It's got nothing to do with peaks. So we're not kids. If you don't have an answer, just don't answer. Say you'll come back to us. We'll give us a clear answer. Because we're talking of the electricity. That the minister has said it's going to be expensive. We just want an answer from there. So the one who's trying to justify that, no, when this peak season you must use diesel and this, it doesn't exist. It doesn't sit on what we're trying to deal with here. That's why we're talking the energy mix in the future planning of what this country needs to deal with. So it's not just a stopgap arrangement that we're dealing with here. So it can be responded in that fashion. Thank you.
Okay. And why do you speak without permission? Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, I think the question is a valid one, and I'm not quite sure that it's very simple to just put it forward, but maybe one of the things that we should say to the Honourable Member is the need for NERSA to be an integral part of this is precisely because of those issues. Because NERSA takes in all the different generation costs, looks at what is the most cost effective, what would be best, and in that, then when it looks at all the other variables in terms of the tariff, then it reaches a particular determination. So I think this is why it becomes very difficult for us, because those are the issues that NERSA does. So NERSA would be able, for instance, to say to us, for this and this window, for instance, the tariff we did 2 years ago included this. So though it's you're quite right, it's a very technical thing, but this is why it needs a NERSA, because when you do it in pockets which are separate, then we don't get the whole picture. Then we have this kind of situation. So I think if we can then say, when we then come back after going through the 7 points, including the NERSA input, would have a much clearer picture to put forward here, with NERSA having done those critical aspects of balancing all these things. Yes,
he will respond. He'll respond to you. Don't ask him a question. Okay. Can we continue, Mr. Apani? I'm taking that into account. I don't know if we want to wait for all the 6-7 steps, but I'm taking into account what was said at the beginning with regard to an input by National Treasury and the role of NERSA. So that comprehensive discussion is required quite soon, so that we can get some clarity. So I'm not sure whether we're going to wait for the completion of all the steps. In my view, not. So, but we'll come back to that. Mr. Apani, please continue.
Thanks, Chair. I think there was just one last question which related to the question around pace and scale. Chair, the Minister makes determinations in relation to the Integrated Resource Plan, and I think Honorable Mackay had indicated that there's about a few thousand megawatts still determined that would be rolled out. What we are saying, Chair, is at the point when the decision was made around that particular pace and scale, the circumstances were different. And what we are saying now is that we would like to reflect on the current reality relating to electricity demand, and then have the necessary flexibility to be able to manage the risk of overcapacity, but also ensure that we have the ability to not create blackouts as we roll out the programs. What we are now definitely seeing is a situation where, as I indicated, with new capacity being brought online, that we certainly do have an overcapacity situation. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to find in the process an ability, the robustness to be able to scale this thing in accordance with the... Chair, you could not have predicted what the demand would have done accurately. I think the point here is that you want to have the flexibility rather than the ability to predict accurately. It's more the flexibility to be able to adjust as the circumstances change. That's what we're saying relative to the pace and scale.
Honorable Mackay, then we're going to have follow-up questions in it. Can you please note all of them?
Could you clarify? Do I have a top opportunity for follow-up, or it's follow-up questions here? It's an additional to the response from Mr. Apani.
Yes. All I'm saying, can we allow them to finish responding to the questions, and then you can answer all your follow-up questions after that.
That is if their caucus doesn't take too long. Are you ready? Please continue.
The Chair, I was just checking whether we've answered all the questions. I think I have exhausted the ones that I have on my list here. I think we have answered them. Thanks.
Honourable Makai.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I listened to Mr. Pani with great concern, specifically around his comments around, you know, the committee and my understanding of costing of electricity. And Chair, I am no expert on costing electricity for sure, but I refer back to the department's own documents on how costing is determined in the basis of the IRP, for example, which uses levelized costs, which I can read out the definition for Mr. Pani if you'd like. The comparison used to compare different sources of new generation capacity globally, the global standard, is levelized costs, possibly in contribution to what we look at overnight capital costs. So all these additional costs Mr. Opani is giving us and spinning on about is really just Mr. Opani trying to make a very specific case for nuclear procurement, which again also relates to how the base case scenario in the IRP is actually going to be set aside, because that wasn't what the IRP said. Actually, Chair, that is what the IRP said. The commentary was quite clear. Now that the department is trying to do a backflip on an IRP that it knows it can't work because the IRP was quite clear in relation to both IRP and the NDP, which is no to nuclear, the department is now spinning. So now we have to start considering all these other additional costs, blah, 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 when he knows quite clearly, Chair, that when comparing costs, the standard for measuring costs are those two costs. So Mr. Opani can regale us with arcane methodology, of which I'm sure he knows far more than I do about costs, but perhaps he can do so in one of his policy documents that actually presents to this committee, or, Chair, call a public hearing where he expresses those costs and allows public consultation for other people to make inputs on questioning his assumptions around those costs, Chair. Because I do find the Chair very difficult to have these sorts of meetings where we are deprived of information. We have one source of information coming primarily from Eskom, a presentation that is primarily drafted by Eskom with no actual inputs from the sector that's being affected, and you're asking us as a committee to make an informed decision. So, Chair, I would propose that this committee, if we're going to discuss costs further, and Mr. Opani is going to give us a lecture on costs, he does so in the company of his peers, who can maybe counter his arguments on exactly which costs should be applied in assessing. Because, Chair, we're well aware of the CSIR's findings around the cost, the least cost options, the best services costs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, Chair, perhaps we can agree to allow experts to have that conversation and present that conversation in an open forum, such as a public hearing, where everyone will be able to give their fair side and fair adjudication on what exactly are the best measures to determine the least cost option for electricity in South Africa and how that relates specifically to the consumer. Chair, again, I'm astounded by Mr. Pani, who is the DDG for planning, sitting here and giving us a lecture about the changed circumstances in which the previous ministerial determinations were given. Chair, those determinations were made in the last 3 years. Now, if Mr. Pani, who is the DDG for planning, is so taken aback at the changed nature of the circumstances, I'll put it to you, Chair, that Mr. Pani might not be the right person for his job. Because frankly, Chair, how did the minister make those determinations in the first place? And how have the situation dramatically changed? The only reason they've changed so dramatically is because the economy has gone and fallen off the edge of a cliff, Chair. Demand is so low, we're now sitting at the energy or electricity demand based back in 2006 and 2007. And that the department did not anticipate this through its planning function says something about the inability of this department to do appropriate planning, which is usually problematic considering the size of the capital investments required by this industry to make sure we have enough electricity at the right point in time. So when Mr. Opani says to me, Chair, we need nuclear at any specific date, what faith do I have in him that he knows what he's doing? Because frankly, Chair, he's just told me, astoundingly, that the minister's determinations have now resulted in changed circumstances that we could not have anticipated. Nonsense, we could not have anticipated it, Chair. I know Eskom is a huge mess and it makes it very difficult for Mr. Opani to do his job, but telling me, Chair, that he couldn't have recognized the change of 14,000 megawatts within the energy demand or supply system, Chair, strikes me as a hugely huge oversight of the department that is deeply embarrassing for the department.
In fact, I should question whether Mr. Pani should still be doing his job. I've raised this question before. We have deep concerns around the way energy planning is conducted in South Africa. Chair, it affects multi-billion rands worth of investments. The people sitting in this room are looking for certainty, and the DDG for planning has just told us he has no certainty because he couldn't anticipate the change over 3 years in electricity demand in South Africa. How do those people then have faith to invest in South Africa's energy future, Chair? Where must they get that faith from if the department cannot provide it? It's hugely problematic, Chair. It affects investments, it affects jobs, it affects cost of electricity in our economy, which means it affects all costs across the economy. So let's, Chair, let us please take this issue very seriously. Chair, also, what we're talking about today is we're trying to isolate the cost of renewables. But Eskom doesn't produce electricity, it produces electricity at a blended price, right? So what we need to understand the long-term impact of the cost of renewables in the energy mix is a trajectory of the blended price over time for us to reflect on how much will the addition of Medupi and Kusile add to the blended price? How much will addition of nuclear capacity, how much will the addition of renewables add, Chair? Because, Chair, the only form of energy in that all of those that I've mentioned that is declining over time is renewable energy, which means that its impact on the blended price over time will continue to decline. It will have less of an impact on the tariff that consumers will pay in the future. Yes, we paid a lot in the first phases of the bid windows 1 and 2, but going forward, the program is so successful that it will have a marginal or smaller effect relative to other forms of energy, other forms of energy technology in the mix added over time. So where, Chair, is a wonderful graph explaining to us the impact of all of these different types of technologies on the blended price? Because, Chair, also, don't forget, these outstanding IPPs that are waiting to be signed will only affect the tariff in the 2018-2019 year. It won't affect Eskom's balance sheet immediately. Only once they are connected to the grid and start producing electricity do they then have to be accounted for via the RCA, Chair. So again, it's like a straw man that's been created. Oh, it's this impact on the balance sheet. We can't possibly sign it now, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is the cost will only be incurred in the future, Chair. So, Chair, we really need more information if we're going to make such huge decisions around whether we support greater IPP participation in our energy sector. And it's not up to NERSA. NERSA has done their numbers. They've crunched the numbers. They've given concurrence to these determinations, which, Chair, I hope means that they've run the maths, that they've done the modelling, and they understand the implications. Because if they don't, then we have a very big problem. If the Minister's assertion that NERSA is responsible for that, then NERSA should be here giving us a presentation alongside the Department on exactly what they found and why they gave concurrence to these decisions. Because they concurred to the decision. The decision has been taken. The determination has been issued. There is a legal commitment for Eskom now to sign. It's not a debate whether Eskom must sign or not. The law says they have to sign in terms of our law and our processes. So can we get to the process where Eskom admits at least that it has a legal obligation to sign and that it will do so forthwith and that the energy planning process has been followed according to the law and now we must adhere to it? It's that simple. Thank you, Chair.
I think we can move toward closure because we won't have a debate. I'd open for questions. We've got to do something about what are we going to do next, so that we've got to talk about. So I see your hand is up, Deputy Minister, because there's a whole range of other discussions we must have, and including that dated RP, what we're going to do. I'll come back to those things. We must have a discussion on a whole range of things. I know these things are not as simple as look at them, but the key question we had posed as the committee for today's session and perhaps for the subsequent session is that can we find some clarity with regard to signing of the power purchase agreement. So that is the main issue that I think has got to be resolved, and I think Minister Brown did say what needs to be done for us to get there. So, because we can get sidetracked by other things, so that's the crucial thing for me. So I know there are things that need to be taken into account, but we need to get some clarity with regard to at when are we going to get to that point. So we will talk about the next steps before we close, so that we don't get into further debates now instead of questions. Because on our members will remember, with regard to experts, it was in our program, going to get them here, just that this particular term is now coming to an end, so we've got to get the experts back here so that they can debate with Mr. Apani and his other peers. So that we're still going to do. We're coming back to that discussion. So I'm trying to focus the discussion, complex as it is, on the issue source. What are the steps needed to take us to resolving the impasse with regard to this power purchase agreement? Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I just need to also concur and say maybe we have come to the end because we are having a discussion and I think it's actually quite personal, which is very unfortunate because the same person who is being seen as absolutely incompetent is the same architect of the Renewable Independent Power Producer Program that everybody is praising in this country and globally. So I think we just need to take a step back because we came here for a particular issue around these power purchase agreements, which unfortunately are not straightforward. Here it is signed. It's got so many factors, and I think that was the starting point to say, actually we need all these other inputs because it's not just an issue that's dependent on the Department of Energy. We have sat down with the DPE and with ESCOM, but I think everybody appreciates that we are not responsible for ESCOM, and the minister is not here, but we continue to engage. There are a number of things that I think the committee might want in the future to actually just look at and not use an entry like the PPA, which doesn't give an opportunity to actually look at what are the factors that impact. So the issue of the experts is a critical one, but more than just the debate around experts and looking at renewables, but just looking at the whole issue of how do we come to the cost. And as I said, NERSA does quite a big chunk of that kind of work. But there are quite a number of technical things, and I think NERSA has actually got a knack for unpacking them in quite in English, if I may use that term, and not in technical language. Chairperson, maybe to also just say that we are also very mindful of the fact that we come from a past where we had very cheap electricity, and we actually had quite a number of power stations that had been mothballed because for political reasons a lot of power generation was procured, and then there was no need at that point. So this power, this very cheap power, was utilized for some industrialization processes such as the Sasol and others, which was very good for the country, but it has had a very, very negative impact in terms of the price path. And this is something that we should be very careful not to come to that point. So some of the issues, when we look at the price path, we need to look and say, where did we actually start from? So there are a whole lot of factors that are looked into. And I think that's why I'm saying a discussion around the entire issue would be most helpful, so that we just don't come with little bits and pieces, which then we can't put together, and they don't give a real comprehensive picture around that. In terms of the ministerial determination, Honourable Member, I do not believe, and I've not heard the Minister want, I think Minister was quite clear about not challenging that issue legally. What Minister is seeking is clarity, and I think it's NERSA that will assist us, and it will give us a way forward, because there has to be the issue around concurrence in terms of what does this mean now for all the other determinations, because the court case spoke about process. So when you look at the processes, what are the implications? So it's more around clarity around that issue, because the minister makes determinations. So I just thought it's also important to just speak to that issue. In terms of what the team has committed to do is to say by the end of the month, they would have something for the political principals to look at and then take forward. So we will communicate with the chair in terms of this is where they are at, and now we've taken this process and this is the way forward. So it's not something that's going to wait, as I said, for the IRP, which we had already indicated here in the PCE, what's the processes and what are the time frames around that. But in terms of this process, the technical team would have finished and then would be able to also come back after all these consultations to come back to you, Chairperson, and say we are ready to give you our way forward, taking into account all these very valid concerns around issues of cost and affordability. I thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Okay. I think we've got to do something to ensure that you can come back here to give us feedback as soon as you are ready. Because the information you need is there. It doesn't mean there are no challenges. There are challenges, including the issues of surplus. The challenges are there, but you have the information, you have the institutions that you can call upon to give you information and assistance so that a determination can be made. All we're asking for from our side is, can a decision be made so that there's clarity about where we're going? That's all. So you've got Deputy Minister come back, and I'm sure the Minister of Public Enterprises and the Minister of Energy and the National Treasury, NERSA, ESCOM, there will be interaction so that soon we can come back here to have a discussion. Because, Honorable Makai, I hear you. So I want to make a contrary plea to the call you're making to those who are participating in this program. It may be an appealing thing to do, but it has consequences. You're from the Democratic Alliance, so I'm a Democrat. I'm not from the Democratic Alliance, but I'm a Democrat. So I have full respect for our system and how it works. The thing is, you see, if increasingly, and if South Africans have a right to exercise their right and their choices, but if increasingly we're going to be encouraging members of the public and other role players out there that they will not find a helpful platform here in Parliament for their views to be heard and their issues to be attended to, they will say there is no point minding going to that institution because it will not help us, we'll rush somewhere else. That will complicate the balance that we must have in our system of the three arms of the state. So I think that we must be careful to rush these things. I do believe. And I'm not saying that a government must make a decision, a 100% decision, this way or that way. All I'm saying is, can we make a considered decision?
and then announce it. And then all the role players know what to do because a decision has been made. So we can't keep with the uncertainty that is there and affecting how the people who want to invest and workers who are uncertain about what's going to happen with their jobs and so on and so on. Can we make the decision and announce that? So I think that we should make everything in our power, honorable members, to bring all these entities back here and the different departments so that we can get a solution to this problem. I think it is necessary. It is necessary for Parliament to continue to play the role that the Constitution enjoins it to play. So there are challenges sometimes, and the people are impatient with how fast we move, but I think that we must still ensure that we can hold departments here and be held accountable. So that's my plea with regard to the plea you're making, and I hope that those concerned will come back here when we have a discussion. But Mr. Apan and the DM, I'm sure you understand that the patience of people is not endless. So they'll come here and then they think, oh yeah, but we're listening to the same story, we don't think there's progress. Then they're going to lose patience and do something else. Okay. Can we now close this meeting? Thank you for allowing us to close the meeting earlier than 1 o'clock. The meeting is adjourned.